a hard landing in Buffalo.
Either state police or sheriff's department need to find out if anything is on the ground. This aircraft was 5 miles out, and all of a sudden we have no response to that aircraft.
There are no survivors as a commuter plane crash lands short of the runway in Buffalo, New York last night. A house was hit. The plane devastated a residential neighborhood. Rescuers say things could have been much worse. It's The Takeaway.
All across America, this is The Takeaway with John Hockenberry and Adora Udoji from WNYC and PRI.
Good morning, everyone. I'm John Hockenberry. The plane, Continental Flight 3407, carried 44 passengers and a crew of four. It took off from Newark, was bound for Buffalo, according to the FAA, the Federal Aviation Administration. All the people aboard the plane and one person in a house the plane directly hit were killed in the crash, which occurred in a hamlet near Buffalo, New York, called Clarence Center, New York. Much more in the show, including a discussion of financial problems facing American banks and the deployment of new troops to Afghanistan. But first, with other headlines, here's Richard Hake filling in for Femi. Okay, good morning, Richard.
And good morning, John. As you mentioned, we're following the crash of that Continental commuter jet near Buffalo very closely. We expect a press conference from Continental Airlines sometime this morning. We'll have more on that very soon. In other stories, it's the job of President Obama. He just can't seem to fill it. New Hampshire Republican Senator Judd Gregg doesn't want to be the next Commerce Secretary. He says it's not because of any single policy issue.
Well, a stimulus package is sort of a catalyst, but it's really not at the essence of the problem or the issue. The issue is philosophy and purpose and how you serve in an administration versus being an independent individual within the Congress.
Senator Gregg says he made a mistake in accepting the nomination. The president says the senator's withdrawal won't deter him from trying to work with the GOP.
The one thing I want to make sure of is people don't take from this the notion that we can't get Democrats and Republicans working together.
The president first tapped a Democrat for the job, New Mexico's Governor Bill Richardson. He withdrew a month ago amid a federal investigation about his links to big business.
That's right. This is the second time around.
Now, meanwhile, Senator Gregg says the $789 billion stimulus wasn't the only reason he withdrew, but it was definitely part of it. House lawmakers have their qualms about the revised bill as well. They were supposed to vote on it yesterday, but said they needed time to read the new plan. A vote may come in both the House and Senate later today. Australian police have charged a man with deliberately lighting one of those deadly wildfires that tore through the country's south. He also faces possession of child pornography. One Australian police commissioner, Christine Nixon, said people should keep an eye out for other suspects.
It's a part of the psychology of criminals to follow the behaviour of others. And so it's part of the reason we keep asking the community to be very aware of what's going on, to see if there are people in their area suspicious or they've got concerns, then to make sure they contact us.
180 deaths in that. Thank you, Richard. Those are the wildfires.
Yeah.
All right. The Senate has confirmed President Obama's choice to direct the CIA back here in the United States. The Dow slipped a little yesterday. It begins trading at 79.33 today. The S&P begins trading at 835. So it's Valentine's Day, but, you know, some of us out there are still single. We wanted to actually do a referendum between the Takeaway listeners who are married and who are single. Which is better, being married or single on this Valentine's Day? Also, keep your stories on the stimulus package coming to 877-8. My Take. It's The Takeaway.
The Takeaway is made possible by Liberty Mutual's Responsibility Project, encouraging discussion about what it means to do the right thing. ResponsibilityProject.com.
The Takeaway is supported by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the John S. and James L. Knight Foundation, advancing journalistic excellence in the digital age. More information about the foundation's digital initiatives at knightfoundation.org. And by the Alfred P. Sloan Foundation to enhance public understanding of science and technology in the modern world.
You're listening to The Takeaway with John Hockenberry and Adora Udoji.
Good morning, everyone. I am John Hockenberry. Adora Udoji is away. Let me catch you up on a couple of things. We are following, of course, the details of Continental Flight 3407, which crashed late last night short of the runway in Buffalo, New York. One person on the ground was killed, and all of the passengers and crew on the plane, 48 people total, did not survive. We'll be following that all hour. Also, it's Valentine's Day tomorrow, not today. Today is Friday the 13th, in advance of Valentine's Day. We're asking a question of all of our listeners. Is it better to be single or married? Think about that between now and Valentine's Day. Give us a call at 877-8-MY-TAKE or mytake at thetakeaway.org and continue bringing us your stories of how the stimulus package should be spent and will be spent in your community. Again, the same number, 877-8-MY-TAKE or mytake at thetakeaway.org. Joining us now is Steve Lohr of the New York Times. He's right here in the studio. And thinking about the financial bailout, the eight bankers were up on Capitol Hill this week facing the lawmakers. It was quite a confrontation. There's a discussion within the administration of a bad bank to store toxic assets as a way of shielding the other banks. But maybe there's even a more disturbing premise on the table here, and it's sort of the elephant in the room. Maybe the banks are already bad. Maybe what we already have is a banking system that, if you do the math, is fundamentally insolvent. First of all, Steve Lohr, if you do the math, are the banks in the United States essentially insolvent?
Some of them are, and the assessment that we did was to take a look at this issue, talked to a bunch of financial economists, and they're basically where they come out is if you look at the system as a whole and the current trends of unrecognized losses, the answer is probably yes.
Wow. Let's talk about this term insolvency. It is a bit of a term of art. I mean, if somebody came to me tomorrow and said, pay everything you owe today, and I said no, I'm insolvent. In many ways, if you do the math, almost everyone is insolvent almost all the time if they had to pay off all their debts. How do you calculate it here?
Yeah, and there are differences. I mean, it's the common sense business definition is that you're, as you're saying, John, that your liabilities exceed your assets. In banking terms, they look at this in terms of in this context of these the rising losses from these bad loans and toxic securities overwhelming their assets. So it's similar but a little bit different. And the issue here is that unless you resolve that problem, the banks are not going to lend as we hope they do, and the sort of wheels of commerce don't keep moving. Mm-hmm. So this is ultimately is not about the banks; it's about the economy and people.
Let's try to do the math here, and there's categories of assets,
sure.
And I wonder if you could separate them. There are the really bad assets. There are the assets that actually look like bad assets, but if you look closely at them, they're actually really good. Then there are good assets, stuff like stocks and bonds that actually aren't really affected
treasury
by this.
Treasury
bonds, bills. Sure, that sort of thing. I heard a number last week from an economist that said that if you add up all the sort of questionable assets and liabilities in the system, it's like something like $655 trillion against the entire economy in the world of 55 trillion. How do you deal with a number like that?
That one is those kinds of estimates are not what we were trafficking in here. Most of those, I think, come from the face value
right.
of some of these complex insurance products, for example. The most recent estimates, and the reason I did this story, I was asked to take a look at the
right.
issue. How should we think about it? And this is a news analysis piece that I wrote.
And thank goodness you did, actually.
But is that we people like Noriel Roubini, who's an NYU economist, have looked at this, and he's been pessimistic in the past, but he's been right. If you look at the snapshot of the current situation, the banks in total have a $3 trillion what are very likely, by his assessment, losses yet to be recognized. About half of that, $1.8 trillion, is held by the U.S. banks, the rest
right.
by other financial institutions, and particularly Europe and other banks around the world. That gets you to $1.8 trillion. And his view, and that of others, is that the whole, if you will, the balance sheet of American banks is on the order of $1 trillion.
Now, part of the question of solvency is if the clock ticks long enough, if there's a long enough time for the payback, everything's going to be okay. If it comes to term shorter, then there's a real catastrophe. How does the timeline look?
At present, the timeline looks pretty lousy, which is with a deteriorating economy. But that is precisely the point and what all the bankers will tell you. And this, in banking terms, this is called forbearance, which is basically the time will heal. And in some past crises, that has certainly been the case. In the early 80s, in the Latin debt crisis, the nine money center banks had were at risk for more than three times their capital. They weren't forced to mark to market, you know, today's prices on those loans, and they came out.
They came out fine.
They had losses, but it wasn't catastrophic. And we sort of did the same thing with the savings and loan.
Can the government and the Obama administration basically extend the timeline here? Is that their main lever?
Yes, but they don't want to, because unless you solve this issue of these bad assets, we're not going to get the kind of lending we need to get the economy going. So their proposal this week was to set up this public-private fund to essentially create a market and put up, you know, to get prices and get the for these bad assets and get them off the bank's books. Most people, or a number of the experts that I talked to, think this is inadequate. That ultimately, the government's going to have to go in, separate the good from the bad banks, take the bad assets and sell them off again as we did in the resolution trust, in the savings and loan case.
Some of those banks did not come back, except now we're talking about the big banks tiptoeing on the edge of insolvency. We're going to have to say it out loud if we have any chance of dealing with this financial crisis. Steve Lohr, thanks so much for providing some clarity there.
Thanks, sir.
Steve Lohr is a New York Times reporter whose current piece in the New York Times is all about calculating whether the banks are not just bad, but fundamentally insolvent. Now, this hour, we're also going to take a look at something that's very, very important to the new administration, the situation in South Asia. We begin in Afghanistan, Kabul, Afghanistan, where the BBC's Afghanistan reporter Martin Patience is, coinciding with the arrival of U.S. envoy Richard Holbrooke, who is in Kabul. It's described as a fact-finding mission. Martin Patience, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Now, Holbrooke, in advance of his trip to Afghanistan, has described the situation in Afghanistan as much more complicated than Iraq, the most serious foreign policy situation. I'm paraphrasing here. Is that a response to reality in Afghanistan, or is it perhaps an attempt to make Holbrooke's status as an envoy look a little more prominent than it might be?
Well, I think it's two things. I think first of all, he also called it a mess. I think it's realizing the magnitude of problems here. The security situation is getting worse. There's a lot of corruption in the Afghan government, and many Afghans just feel that things aren't getting better. So I think by making these types of comments, Richard Holbrooke is raising the issue that this is incredibly complex, but he's also very blunt. He's a very blunt man, and I think that's one of the reasons why he's been chosen for this job, because he will knock heads. And I think there's a real sense that things need to start moving very quickly in Afghanistan, otherwise the whole kind of project, the whole effort could end up slipping away in the coming years.
Well, Martin, is the first head to be knocked then that of Afghan President Hamid Karzai, who controls the central part of the country but not much more?
Well, I think that's right. I mean, certainly American officials have been incredibly critical of the Afghan government in recent months. In fact, with Barack Obama's new administration, we've seen a kind of tougher line. For example, the Secretary of State, Hillary Clinton, said that Afghanistan is a narco state. So I think there's a real sense that Hamid Karzai must tackle corruption. He must do more to try and promote good governance in order to try and win over the trust of the Afghan population, who are deeply mistrustful of their government. I mean, that's one element. The other element, obviously, is that the international community, there's a feeling that they need to be more coordinated and perhaps do more in order to get the security situation right, obviously alongside with the Afghan security forces.
Martin, we're going to take a break in a moment and then come back and talk more broadly about South Asia. But before we go, is the word on the ground there in advance of an official announcement from the Obama administration that the troop levels in Afghanistan on the part of NATO and the U.S. are going to double soon?
Well, certainly there is going to be an increase in troops. There's a lot of talk about how many American troops will actually come to Afghanistan. And Barack Obama, the U.S. president, has said that no final decision has been taken on that.
But it's going to be a significant number. It's going to be a significant number, that's for sure. Martin Patience is with us from the BBC in Kabul. We're also going to continue our discussion with Parag Khanna, a fellow at the New America Foundation, to talk about main issues facing the Obama administration in South Asia. Thank you, Martin. We'll be right back.
Yeah. You can email us at mytake@thetakeaway.org or call us toll-free at 877-8-MYTAKE.
869-8253.
Since WNYC's first broadcast in 1924, we've been dedicated to creating the kind of content we know the world needs. Since then, New York Public Radio's rigorous journalism has gone on to win a Peabody Award and a DuPont Columbia Award, among others. In addition to this award-winning reporting, your sponsorship also supports inspiring storytelling and extraordinary music that is free and accessible to all. To get in touch and find out more, visit sponsorship.wnyc.org.